and gentlemen, to another year, the Siyata D'Shmaya, in the Motzoi Shabbos series. I want to thank all those who helped arrange it, and helped publicize it, most important, those who were attending. This year's topic is evolution and change in halacha, a topic which is very daunting, but very important. Let's begin from the beginning. The Torah was given to us on Har Sinai by Hashem, and we believe in revelation, divine revelation. Like any other body of law, the Torah is subject to interpretation. And there can be more than one. What happens when there's more than one interpretation? So there's a very famous Maamar Chazal, which I'm sure many of you know, on the Pasuk Lo Bashamayim Hi. Not the simple reading of the Pasuk and Sefer Devarim. Chazal interpreted to mean that the decision in terms of how the Torah is to be interpreted is no longer in heaven, but has been given to mere mortal, to human beings. That's quite a staggering concept. And a corollary is the expression that Tzchuni Bonai, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, where a dispute exists between various of the sages, and there are signs, not going into details now what the signs are, that Hashem, Kivayochel, favors one particular position in a matter of ritual purity or impurity. Yet the majority view differs. Nitzchuni Bonai means that I favor one position, but the majority rules to the contrary. And their position, that of the majority, is normative. That's where you follow the halacha. It's quite an amazing concept. But that's what it is. Hashem Yisbarach gave over the power of interpretation of the Torah to human beings. In fact, you all know there's a Maamar Chazal that when Hashem was about to give us the Torah, the Malachim said, no, don't give the Torah to the people. And the obvious question is, don't give the Torah to the people. What was the response? It says in the Torah, Kabeira Sevicha Vesimecha, honor your parents. Angels have no parents. And down the line, what did the angels want? But what were they thinking? So the Beis Halevi explains, they understood that it's humankind, Klal Yisrael in particular, that is required to observe the laws of the Torah. This they understood very well. What bothered them was who's in control of the Torah? Who decides when there's an issue of dispute within the Torah? This, they insisted, must remain in heaven. How will be communicated? We'll figure that problem out. Certainly there was an opportunity to communicate it when they had prophets. And Hashem said, no. Prophecy is not the way to go. A prophet who prophesies about a particular law is a Navi Sheker. Because there are no more prophecies that determine laws. Human beings. The angels thought, how can you give the Torah to these human beings? They have all these foibles, all these weaknesses, all these Yetzirahs. And Hashem's response is, yes, every person has weaknesses, but given that fact, I still determined, Hashem determined, that the final decision in these disputed matters is in the hands of these human beings. Which human beings? Which? What do they say now? 6 billion, 7 billion people now in the world? Just hit 7? Okay. A lot of people. So which human beings? So you have to go back to the very beginning and look on the Chumash itself and see where it starts. This problem exists a long time ago, even in the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu, who heard the Torah directly from Hashem and Har Sinai. You think, as long as he's alive, at least that long, there's no need for any other human beings. Pasuk says in Parshas Baloscha, Esfal Shivim Ish Mizikna Yisrael. What does that mean? That means gather together 70 people. Ashiadata came Zikne Ha'om Vishotrov. That you know, these are individuals who have, as Rashi comments, they had Rachmanis, they took a couple of bullets for Bnei Yisrael, and you make them part of a Sanhedrin. Here's the number 70, the magic number. 71, including Moshe Rabbeinu. And so as Moshe Rabbeinu himself who chose, how did he choose them? Presumably he chose the most qualified individuals. Yes. If you want to give a modern American comparison, the initial Sanhedrin was perhaps more like the Senate than like the House. Because Rashi quotes from Chazal that Moshe Rabbeinu chose 6 from each Shevet. 6 times 12. Whoa. 72. So Rashi has a whole discussion. He had 72 names and the two came up empty. I'm not going into all those details. So, what's this? Why 6 from each? Some Shvatim were bigger. Like some states are bigger. Maybe some Shvatim had more wise men. That's how it was chosen in that initial choosing. So we do see, yes, human considerations come in to the choice of the original 70 members to join Moshe Rabbeinu in the Sanhedrin. And human considerations will undoubtedly continue to affect the appointment of subsequent bodies of this nature until the end of time. However, having said that, it's important to understand that in order to qualify, a person has to be someone who has many wonderful midos, described largely in Parashas Yisro. Anshei Emes is, of course, the number one criterion. And there are many others over there. I'm not going into it right now. Okay. So now we have this idea of a Sanhedrin. Obviously, the name Sanhedrin wasn't chosen yet. It's a Greek word. We'll call it, perhaps in our language, a Beis Din HaGadol, the great Beis Din of 71 individuals. There's only one of them in Klal Yisrael. There was always only one. And this is a group which determines, with finality, whenever there's a dispute in Klal Yisrael. Fine. So let's take a step back and assume that as long as this body exists, there can never be a long-standing dispute in Klal Yisrael. Right? How long can it last? Well, the Pesukim tell us how long it can last. Just look in Parshas Shoftim, where this Beis Din is referred to. The Torah teaches us as follows: Ki poleim chadav la mishpat. Something you don't know. It's hidden from you. No problem. V'kamtav yolis alamokam mashiyifcha Hashem al kechabo. You come to the Shofet, Yom HaMahim, and you do whatever they say. Lo sosu yom unusmo. If someone should in fact rebel and rule differently, we call that a zokei mamei, is put to death. And you have to be pretty qualified to be put to death. If you're a plain guy who doesn't know anything, nah. You have to be someone who's roared to be in the Sanhedrin. This is... That's a very strong punishment just for arguing in a matter of Jewish law? Yes. Because otherwise, the whole system's going to fall apart. V'cholam yishmu v'yiro. That's the next pasuk. You have to have a uniform din in the Beis Din HaGadol. Okay. So, till when did this institution exist? A historical question I'm asking you. Till when did we have this institution of a central Bezdin, which existed with 71 great Chachamim on it? Anyone have a suggestion? Yes?
I think a little bit before the destruction of
the second temple. That is based upon a Gemara. The Gemara says that 40 years before the destruction of the second temple, the Sanhedrin, which was located as it's supposed to be located, Eitzel HaMizbeach, that's the Rashi, it's a psukim over here in Parsha Shoftim al HaMokom. The Mokom, of course, is Yerushalayim, never referred to as Yerushalayim throughout the Chumash. We all know it means Yerushalayim. But perhaps even more well known from the Rashi at the very beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. Why is Mishpatim right after the discussion of the Mizbeach? Shetosim Sanhedrin Eitzel HaMikdosh HaMizbeach. So it was all the years it was in the Mikdash, and 40 years before the Churban, they exiled themselves. I'm not going into the details why they did that. But although they exiled themselves, they still had a status of Sanhedrin. As a matter of fact, the Gemara tells us that the Sanhedrin had 10 Golios. Gemara tells us it went from Yerushalayim, then it went to Yavne, and it went up to the Galil, to Tveria, to Usha, back and forth. So it didn't quite come to an end as an institution at that point in time. It went on for quite a while thereafter. So we would assume that as long as there is a Sanhedrin, there cannot be any disputes. Because just resolve it! Resolve it! Go to Bez Nagodol and resolve it! Of course it could be a dispute for a short period of time, no matter how long it takes to get to Yerushalayim. Yes?
But in the time of the Amorim, when the Sanhedrin was still functioning, presumably, no. We have Machlokets that aren't resolved.
Let's go. Go back to the Tanoim. Perhaps even to the Nevi'im. Let's discuss those things. How can there be disputes which precede the coming to the of the Sanhedrin institution to an end? So it seems to be impossible. So there's a Gemara that talks about it in Masechta Chagiga. The Gemara Daf Tezayin and Manal from Masechta Chagiga tells us as follows. There is a Mishnah about a dispute about Smicha and Yom Tov, a technical discussion where you're supposed to put their hands on the animal that's being brought on Yom Tov, and they're arguing back and forth. They're arguing. Of course, the question becomes, when do these individuals live? Who are these individuals? We know that their names from Pirkei Avos. We call them the Zugos, the pairs. One is a Nasi, one is an Av Bezdin. Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochan, and Shua ben Prach and Yitir Bailey, Huda ben Tabai, Shimon ben Shetach, Shmaya, Avtalion, alright? Then you have Hillel and Shammai. Wait a minute. The Beis HaMikdash is still around. Hillel, who was later, was passing Shabbos about the Korban Pesach on Shabbos. That's what made him famous in the first place. And how many generations before? Four or five. And how many generations after Hillel to the Churban Abayis? Another four. And Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, the first, was the time lived was when that's Haruge Malchus with Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol. So you're talking about, wow, you're talking about generations before, eight generations before the Churban. Way before, the Sanhedrin was sitting there ensconced comfortably in Yerushalayim and they had to fight it. What do you mean? Resolve it. I mean, this could be true that each one said this, but why is it relevant? There should be 1, 2, 3. He's got to make a vote. Says Tosfos. It says it according to Yerushalmi. B'rishon Elohayo machlokas. There was no machlokas except for smicha alone. That was the only machlokas. One, for some reason, one thing was never resolved. Time Shammai and Hillel came around, there were four disputes. Starting to Misha. Rabu Tamidei Shammai VeHillel Shloshim Shukol Tzorkon Rabu Machlokas VeYisrael VeNechuchu LeBeis Kitos. All of a sudden, there's two groups: Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. We still know how it happened. There's still Sanhedrin. You think this is the problem? This is what Tosfos asks now. VeYeshet Moa Harei Nechuchu Kvar B'Mei Shol Al Milveu Pruta. More tells us in the Sanhedrin that if someone marries a woman with a pruta, it's good. Marries a woman with a milveh, with a loan, by canceling a loan, then it's no good. What if you do both? Was the machlokes at the time of Shaul and David relating to Michal? Those who know the Gemara, it's not going into the details right now. How can it be? How can it be? What's going on over here? So there's even a bigger kash. Is the machlokes going back to the time of Shaul and David? How do you explain all these things? These are tremendous questions which have to be understood. The Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin tells us as follows. There are two Gemaras we're going to quote. The Gemara we're discussing now is the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin of Pei Ches Amud Beis. This is the Gemara which we just read before from Tosafot. We'll read in the Gemara itself. Misharabu Tamidi Shami Vehilo Shloshim Shem Kol Tzokon Rabba Machlokos B'Yisrael. Now it says Torah Kishtei Toros. This is in the context of Zok and Mamre. Mitzchila Lo Hoyu Mabu Machlokos B'Yisrael. Ela Bezin Shal Shivim V'Yechad Yoshin B'Lishkas Agozis. And they would answer all the questions. There was never any disputes. Terrific. What went wrong? What do you mean? Tamidei Shama Behilalo Shimshu Kol Tzorko. What do the words mean? So, I'd like to take a step back and ask another question. We said before that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah over to human beings, Lo Bashamayim Hi. And we asked, which human beings? There are so many, there are billions of them. And the answer was, he gave it to the 70 individuals whom were chosen by Moshe Rabbeinu. They were the first Bez Nagadol, and they were the ones who were in charge of the halacha to make all these determinations. Let me ask you the next question. What happened after that? No one lives forever. No one. So what happened subsequently? And subsequently? And subsequently? What happened? Sorry? Smicha. Okay, there was smicha, correct. Smicha is an institution of uninterrupted transmission of authority from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the smicha ended. When did that end? Also when? We have no smicha today. Our smicha today is just a different kind of a institution. But we don't have uninterrupted chain since Moshe Rabbeinu. Came to an end in Eretz Yisrael, the 4th century. That was when it became critical to establish a calendar. Because the original system required smicha, which we no longer have. So if you look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin earlier, the Gemara tells us there was a certain system. Let me just read you the Gemara. How these subsequent positions were filled. Whenever there was a vacancy, how is a position filled? It's a Mishnah. Starts on Naflamid Vav, goes to Lamed Zayin. Sholosh Shura Shal Tamidei Chacham Yoshen Lefneyan. Kol Echad V'Yechad Makir Es Mekomo. Hutzrichu Lismoch. Rashi explains. Kon Shemes Echad Ben Adayonim. A vacancy due to death. No one lives forever. Somchlo Meharishonim Shem Gedolim Mikula. It was a system. Everyone knew his place. It was a pecking order. And when a new person came on, he didn't sit in the place of the person whom he replaced. He said, B'mkom ha'roilo. He was low man on the totem pole. And he moved up. Okay. But who's making these decisions? Who decides? Yes, everyone is makos mekom. A person should know his place. But who invites them? The presumption is, it's the Sanhedrin itself. Sanhedrin itself was in charge of Minui HaDayonim as a representative of Klal Yisrael, Shoftim V'Shotrim, Titan Lecha B'chol She'arecha. And they were able to see to it who would be qualified, because there were many, what we call Sanhedrin Katanas, 23 in the Bezdin. And you moved up, you got appointed to the 23, presumably by the Bezdin HaGadol itself. Obviously, there were nominations. And then they moved them, it was a self-selecting group. Now, in today's democracy, doesn't sound good. The only democratic country that I know about that has a system today, believe it or not, is Israel. And they scream and they yell. It's a self-perpetuating system. In principle, it goes back to the Sanhedrin. In principle, you understand? I'm not here in any way to make any other equations between these two groups, but. That seems to be the Pashup Shap in the Mishnah Sanhedrin of Lamed Zayin, and in the Rambam, as the Rambam quotes it in Hilchos Sanhedrin. That's what it would appear. So yes, HaKadosh Baruch gave the Torah to people, but to a certain group of people that seems to have perpetuated itself by appointing new ones to replace those who would pass away, and it would go on, went on for thousands of years. Okay, keep this in mind. Now the question becomes again, how come there was any dispute before the Sanhedrin system ceased to exist? That's the question. So, the Mefarshim give the following answer. This is an answer, I'm going to quote you from the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish was responding to a Dvar Torah by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, Zichrono Levracha, Hashem Yimkom Domo, which is printed in his Sefer Kuntres Divrei Sofer, which I have here in the Kovetz Shiurim. And Rabbi Chanan printed the response of the Chazon Ish and his response in a later volume, which is called Kovetz Inyonim, which I couldn't find on my bookshelf, so I'm just going to quote it to you from a secondary source. He said, Sanhedrin was unable to gather in those difficult years, quote, "Mipnei ol hagolos ugzeros hamalchus." In those days, as you probably know from the history books, it wasn't so easy. This is the period when the Romans are already beginning to make their influence felt long before they finally brought down and burned down the second Beis HaMikdash. And in addition, Chazon Ish said, not everybody could get there. They just couldn't get there. They were spread out throughout Eretz Yisrael. They could no longer get to Yerushalayim easily. It was difficult. There were gzeros and other problems. And therefore, although even in Rebbe's time, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who wrote the Mishnah, who lived after Churban Beis HaMikdash, he had a status of Bez Nagodol, no doubt about it. Nonetheless, quote, Lo hoya nechshav lebezn shel kol Yisrael. Because not everybody can make it. Only if everybody can come together can there be this concept of a Bezn shel kol Yisrael. Therefore, quote, Lo hoya lo koach lachriya halacha lekol Yisrael. Because when we were in the desert and we had the 70 people together, everyone could come together and they represented all Chachmei Yisrael and all of Klal Yisrael. And therefore their word was final. By the time we have these machlokas and starting, already in the Zugos, apparently there was an inability for everyone to get together because of the exigencies of the time. And as a result, although it was a Bezn HaGadol, did not have the status of a Bezn Shel Kol Yisrael, and sometimes they couldn't even come to a minyan because they couldn't get everybody together. This is what the Chazon Ish suggests to answer this question. Of course, this might help to explain the perplexing dispute which existed in the time of Shaul and David. Now David was a great Talmud Chacham, as we know from the head of the Sanhedrin later on. So why couldn't he get together with Shaul and then just have a vote? Who learned Navi? He was a fugitive. He was on the run. He'd come, they'd kill him. So he could. So there you have the first historical case when the Bezdin couldn't get together, and therefore the question of Kiddusha with the Milvah and a Pruta went unresolved. This is the paradigm, much earlier in history, for all the later events which are being described by the Chazon Ish, even in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and the time of the Mishnah, and the time of the Gemara, and certainly for later times. Perhaps, for all we know, he did, and they made a decision, and which was final. The dispute existed at the time, a complicated story with Michal Palti Ben Laish. She was married, she was not married. We're not going into those details. Perhaps after they Sanhedrin was met, it was resolved. Okay. Now, this is relevant because this explains, perhaps, what was unique about the two critical moments in history when later Chachamim were no longer able to argue with an earlier group. Happened twice in history. Mishnah, Braisa, once the Mishnah says what it says, someone who comes later, we call him an Amora, is not entitled to dispute it. The whole Gemara is based upon that. Mesa, we have to question against a particular Amora because you're against the Tanoim. If you can't find a Tana like you, you lose. Why? The Kesef Mishnah, Nilchus Mamim, asked that question. Why? Why? Everyone's allowed to argue with those who came before. Well, what happened over here? He answers, well, they were makabal on themselves. The Amorim accepted upon themselves not to argue on the Tanoim. In the Sefer Kovetz Shurim, he doesn't understand what that means. He says, this Kabbalah, he doesn't quite understand what the nature of this Kabbalah is. What kind of thing is this? What do you mean Kabbalah? What kind of Kabbalah? I read you his words. Kuntres Divrei Sofrim. Those want to look it up. It's Simon Bays. This particular item that I'm quoting, page Tzadi Zayin, Ozvav. Sorachi and Hoban Kabbalah Zu Mativa. Uvama Kocha Yofa Shliyev Shalachal Gamal Kabbalah Zos Piatzma. You are going this itself? That's his question. Answers Rabbi Chonon. Chasimes HaMishnah Yagamkein Bekibutz Kochachma Yisrael Oruban. Who have the power of Bez Nagodol, and no one can argue on them unless they have the power of Bez Nagodol. Who knows when the next time in history this happened, that all the Chachmei, they say all, you know, almost all the Chachmei Yisrael got together. Anybody know? After the time of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi? The presumption happened one more time, the time of Ravina Rav Ashi, Chasimas HaTalmud. And I remember the poignant words of the historian Yitzchak Isaac Halevi in his Doros HaRishonim. At the very end of his lengthy description of the history of the Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, he says, and now we're bidding farewell to Eretz Yisrael. Like you want to cry when you read this. We're bidding farewell to Eretz Yisrael when unfortunately now we're having to leave, and the repression of the early Christians really were worse than the Romans. And they caused us to leave, and they were trying to destroy us and to pulverize us and to lead us into absolute oblivion. And then he ends with an up. But they didn't realize it was all part of the divine plan. That all the Chachamim should be able to congregate in Bavel, where Bavel was the crucible of the Talmud Bavli, which is the body of law for all generations. Ah! So we got the last laugh, you know. By preventing the having dual centers in two different countries, which we ended up, from the perspective of intellectual history, better off. No. And therefore, says Rabbi Chonon, Evshe Shebishas Chasimas HaTalmud Hoyol and Koach Lachlo Gamal HaMishnayis. Like any Bez Nagodol, can argue on a previous Bez Nagodol. But in between Chasimas HaMishnah, Chasimas HaGemara, they never had Kibbutz Kol Chachmei Yisrael B'Yachad. They never got together. They couldn't argue. Hmm. Says Rabbi Chanan, what'll happen if all Chachmei Yisrael can get together today? It's a big if. With all the ability to do so, right? With all the ability to do so with emails and etc., it sounds much easier today. He conveys an impression that we'd be able to argue in the Gemara. Conveys the impression. Chazanish wrote back to him, that's what he prints there. Dvarim Elu, not only is it usur to write it, also the Shoman. You can't even hear it. You're not allowed to hear it. I wanted to suggest that a source for Rabbi Chanan is the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says as follows. Gemara says, Imos Moshe Rabbeinu Ad Rebbe Lo Matzinu Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad. So whatever else the Gemara means, there was this rabbi, but there was another rabbi. So this was another one. It was always a competing group. And then the Gemara says, Imos Rebbe Ad Rav Ashi Lo Matzinu Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad. They all cover to Rav Ashi. This is what it's saying. Chazish, it's impossible to assume this. He says, it's frozen in time, from the time of the Tanoim, and Amora couldn't argue. So he asked Rabbi Chanan, why? Why couldn't he argue? So he explained, it wasn't that they were makabal on themselves because they were tzaddikim. They were makabal on themselves when they realized that there was a drop in the intellectual capacity of Chachmei Yisrael. And therefore they did not have the ability to argue on those who came before. That's how the Chazon Ish understands it. According to Rabbi Chanan's simple understanding, no. It's a technical distinction. All Chachmei Yisrael together, no individual can argue with them. Like Bez Nagoda, like the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. That existed in the time of Rebbe, so Amoraim can't argue with Tanoim, and Rav Ashi. So the Gemara has above Metzia, Ravina, Rav Ashi, so far off. No one can argue with the Gemara. But the Chazon Ish says, no, it's not that would imply if people can get together today, we can argue. Oh, also the Shomo. Must mean that we realize, every group realized it was not on the level of those who came before. That's what he suggests. Okay. Now we come to the Rambam. Yes, sir.
But actually, since we know that the original group started by being appointed by Moshe Rabbeinu, and then it self-perpetuated.
Correct.
But after, at a certain point when that perpetuation ceased, let's say after the Paschim of the Talmud, whatever you want to say.
Now what happens?
Okay, now, let's say all the Chachmei Yisrael got together, but we wouldn't know who the Chachmei Yisrael are, because now you have the original question of how do you pick the first ones to pick themselves again.
100% correct.
So, it wouldn't be a question that would be practical.
It's a good question. One has to ask that question even with respect to Ravina and Rav Ashi. Because if the Sanhedrin came to an end before them, which it did, one has to begin to... they all came together, so apparently, at least in theory, it's possible. And the Rambam seems to say what Rabbi Chanan said. It's not a matter that we went down levels. It's that we just didn't come together. I'll read it to you. Ravina Rav Ashi Sof Chachmei HaTalmud. This is the introduction of the Rambam to his classical sefer, the Yad HaChazaka. What did they do? Gozru gzeros hiskinu takonos v'nhigun v'nhogos v'poshtu v'gzerosu v'takonosu v'minagosan b'chol Yisrael b'chol makomos moshrosu. All of Israel felt subservient to this one bezin of Ravina Rav Ashi. Finished it. He had listed the words of the Rambam. Nispazru Yisro b'chol ha'arotos pizur yeser. We were dispersed. V'yiu lekatzvos ul'iyim erachokim. All over the world. V'rabas k'tota ba'olam. V'nishtabshu adrochim b'gayosos. V'nismat talmud Torah. Everyone's just spread out. We can't get together. Learning stopped. Vloniskansu Yisrael Lumol Bishivosem Alofim Revavas Moshayam Bikoda. They used to have thousands, tens of thousands. He had a couple here, a couple there, they're learning and they're learning. Any bezin after the Talmud, b'chol Medina, Medina, is only for its own limited geographical location. Lo poshtu masa b'chol Yisroel, ne rochak moshvoseim, v'shibush hadrochim. And therefore, they are yechidim, and the bezin of 71 is already built even before the Talmud. Therefore, no one can force anybody else to follow his own ruling. Nobody. There's no longer an institution. There's no longer an institution of central authority. Stopped. Stopped completely. Stopped. But whatever is in Talmud Bavli, there you have to follow it. No one's allowed to argue with it, and you have to enforce it, etc., etc., etc. Why? Hol v'chalos and advarim shebetalmud hiskimu aleim kol Yisrael. And those who instituted them were kol chachma Yisrael arubam. Who are the Kabbalah, Ishmi Piyesh Ad Moshe? Everybody afterwards, they're called Gaonim, they're very nice, we like them, but you can always argue with them. After the Talmud, you can argue. This is the Rambam. These are very, very important, fundamental beginnings to the beginnings. What happens now, after the Gemara? So what do you do now? So we know that we have a Shulchan Aruch. How did Shulchan Aruch come about? How did it come about? There's so many great rabbis that lived between the time of the Ravina Rav Ashi and the time of Rav Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch. How do you know? So the way to know is simply to open up where Rav Yosef Karo wrote in his introduction. He tells you on what basis he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Not a secret. He tells you exactly how he did it. So many views. L'chein eskamti b'dati ki liol shloshes amudei harah. There were three pillars of rulings. Asher habayis beis Yisrael nishan aleim b'horoseim. That the house of Israel, relied upon these, stands on these three pillars in their rulings. Who are they? Haleim ha'orif v'horamba v'horosh zal. I follow the majority of these, two out of these three. And that's what we follow. Except, everyone's an exception, right? There's always an exception. B'miktas mekomo shekol chachmei Yisrael arubam cholkin al adas ahu v'lachein poshad haminag behepech. If all these three are on one corner and the whole world's on the other corner, there Ira of Yosef Kara will say, we'll follow the outside majority, and for that reason the minig followed that outside majority. Fascinating. The Ramah, famously, in his introduction to his version, Darkei Moshe, says, I love Rav Yosef Karo, he did a great, great thing, but we're Ashkenazim. We don't follow the majority. No, he packed the court. Two Svarim were Ashkenazi. No. Our custom is that we follow who? We follow the Mordechai, the Rosh, the Tosfos. And that's how I follow. That's all. So you change the majority. You take out the riff and put in the Rabbeinu Tam, and then you have an Ashkenazi majority. Stroke of a pen. Okay. So, having said this, we now understand some very, very important points. We already saw that when there's no central authority, it's every chacham in effect for himself. He can't be compelled under the pain of death, Zokin Mamre, if there's no gathering of the Bez Nagadol to rule against him. And in point of fact, The Rashba says in the Tshuva that an individual can follow his Rav even if he's a minority view, even if as a result he'll do something which the majority considers to be a Torah prohibition. The Gemara in Pesachim Daf Nanav talks about certain kinds of food, certain kinds of chalev, which some thought was prohibited. But in a certain town, they ate that chalif. Perhaps more famously, The parak of Rabbi Eliezer de Mila, that Rabbi Eliezer, who was known for his strong views, ruled that on Shabbos, there's a bris, you chop wood to make a fire, to make a knife, and all these things which we would call Chilul Shabbos. You scream out, Shabbos! He did it in his town. And were the people, were the townspeople punished? Says the Gemara, the opposite. When the Romans came and they ordered that circumcision cease throughout Eretz Yisrael, there was only one town that was somehow not included in their edict. That was Rebbe Eliezer's town. Because they did what others thought was Chilul Shabbos out of loyalty to their roof. Wow. These are such important, important yesodos. So it turns out, we have this complex relationship. We just read before an expression from Rabbi Yosef Karo. Well, there are exceptions to the rule of following Rif Amram and Rosh. If it's a majority out there, and they have a Pashat HaMinug against Rif Amram and Rosh. What came first? Did the Minug against them came first? And that's why Rabbi Yosef Karo ruled against Rif Amram and Rosh? Or was it a majority of other Rabbanim? Those majorities are a very difficult majority to construct, because once you're out there, there's who knows how many rabbis follow the Rambam, and how many follow the Rif, and how many follow the Rosh. We no longer have a number of 71. There is no, and they're not arguing face to face. We don't follow a majority when they're not say, in a room. How do you know what one would say to the other? So therefore, it turns out, as the Rambam puts it, quote, there's a Rambam, an amazing Rambam. Well, the Rambam tells you that I think one way, but don't listen to me. That's not a typical phrase. It's the Rambam which is critical, it's absolutely critical Rambam. It's not a small detail. It's a question of when is Shemitah. We know when Shemitah is, don't we? Every 7 years, right? What happened to Yovel? What happened to Yovel? Where's Yovel these days? Where is it? Where? Where's Yovel? Says the Rambam, my opinion is, you have Shemitah, you have Yovel, and a certain calculation. Avol! This is in Perek Yud of Shemitah. Kol ha-ga'onim amru. These are the Gaonim which you don't have to follow them. We said, right, you just said it. You don't have to follow the Gaonim. Didn't he say it? You don't have to listen to them. It's not Ravina Ravashi. But these Gaonim, Amram Mesoras, Yibidem, Ishmi Piyish, Shalomanu, Biosim Shivim Shana, Shemen Churban Rishon, Churban Sheni, Ela Shemitas without Yovels. No Beis HaMikdash, no Yovel. And so too, since the Churban Abayis. And therefore, the Shemitah year against of the Gaonim is this year is Shemitah. It tells us the year we're talking about. Shnas Shiva Umeya Ve'elef L'churban Motzoi Shvius. This year is Motzoi Shvius. Ve'al Zeh Anu Somchen. The Rambam. He was no weak-spirited individual. He knew how to argue with anybody. This Rambam, who said his opinion on everything, Koyim Mishtachim Umoidim. He all of a sudden just turns into a he bows himself and gives in to the others. Why? He tells you why. He gives you, and these are words for all time. Shakabola vahamase amudim gedolim behora uvahen roi lihitolos. This is the Kabbalah of the Gaonim. This is a master that Klal Yisrael is following. So although I, Rambam, think it's all wrong, I bow with deference to them. Wow. Wow. Amazing. So we see the power of Kabbalah and the power of Minhag, that we're required to follow them whenever there's a doubt. So it would appear. It doesn't mean Kabbalah in terms of Madonna's Kabbalah. It doesn't mean that. No, not at all. Kabbalah here means a mesorah, means a tradition. Means a tradition. And therefore, if there's a mesorah with respect to the Shemitah, which is such a fundamental point, which is universal, so everyone has accepted this mesorah. Everyone. The Chazon Ish got involved in this one as well, because there were those who wanted to say that we don't have to keep Shemitah anymore nowadays. Very simple logic. Shemitah is derabbanan, it's a rabbinical prohibition nowadays. And we don't know when Shemitah is. There are three different years when it could be. Plus you have the Rambam who has his Yovel thrown in. So you don't know what it is. You don't know what it is. So forget about the whole thing. There's no dice. This is determined. If the Rambam is right with the Gaonim. And that's it. You have to keep Shemitah.
So what happened to Yovel?
It doesn't exist when there's no Beis HaMikdash. That's all. Now, there is a concept of minhag hamakom. Particular places have particular minhagim. I don't mean minhagim in the sense of new acceptances and customs, which is also true, but a minhagim in terms of how to paskin, how to decide among the earlier competing views. And if you look in the Gemara and Pesachim, there's a concept of a minhag hamakom is found with respect to both. Respect to when you can do malacha there or Pesach, that's a minhag which they accepted. And with respect to what chalev you're allowed to eat, as I mentioned earlier, and they're throwing them together into the same Gemara. If there are two opinions, and the one opinion is what's called, quote unquote, poshat, it spread, hamasa b'chol ha'olam, someone who rules in the reverse, says the Rambam, is called a tos. You can't, it's just a mistake. It's a plain mistake. But, now it gets exciting. Till now it's been fundamental, now it gets exciting. What happens when there is no universal acceptance? We all accept what Shemitah is, that yes. But there are thousands upon thousands of disputes which have never been resolved universally and are still the subject of disputes. Till today. What happens then? So, there's a concept of a community. Community accepting upon itself the customs in terms of psak of the Rebbe. As in Rebbe Lez's town, they chopped wood on Shabbos for a bris milah. Of course, the question becomes, what happens if the community disperses? So, the community disperses. That ruling is gone. Whether it be a custom that they accepted upon themselves, some kind of stringency, or whether it be a determination within a previous dispute, the community is no longer there. I have to tell you that the Chazon Ish got involved here a third time tonight. They say the Rambam, they called him Mora Da'ara de Yisrael. He didn't live there, but the people in Israel accepted the Rambam because of the great his greatness. Yet, Rav Yosef Karo, he lived in Eretz Yisrael, Sof Yom, he didn't necessarily follow the Rambam. Oh, Rav Yosef Karo, he's Mora Da'ara de Yisrael. What he says goes. Says Chazon Ish, that's not true today, because the Kehillah dispersed, and we no longer have these rules. We have to follow the Gemara. And the way we understand the Gemara, that's it. I don't care what the Rambam says, what Rav Yosef Karo says. Again, I don't care, but it's not binding. Not binding any longer. Yes.
There was an argument made that the minhag that started in Ashkenaz of not eating kidneys on Pesach, when those people came to Eretz Yisrael, where the majority were Sephardim at that time, they had no right to bring their minhag over because that community left its roots. So today, in Eretz Yisrael, there shouldn't be a concept of kidneys.
That's an interesting argument. As you probably are aware, the Ashkenazim and Eretz Yisrael to this day keep that minhag. And I believe that the reason for this minhag is as follows. Kitnias became what I call in my language a pan-Ashkenazic minhag. It was accepted Don't tell me, ask me why. It's de facto. It's important to discriminate. This is not a minig of how to pass in some din from Moshe Messina. Everyone knows that kidneyos is mutter in the Gemara, and that's what we assume. Although there's one opinion that says always it's also me, but we assume it's mutter in the Gemara against one view which says differently. It's a later enactment which was accepted by the Ashkenazim 1,000 years ago. Something's going to be a little bit later. But all Ashkenazim accepted it. In my view, if you're an Ashkenazi, you cannot convert and become a Sephardi. What am I telling you? I did. And I was a little bit upset by it. He did for personal reasons, for family reasons.
Community leaves its community.
The concept of Ashkenazim and Sephardim became so entrenched. I do not believe that a person has a right to switch from one to the other unless there are exceptional circumstances. And since it's pan-Ashkenazic, I believe that it applies, even though I'm living in New York, and the Minyan was in Europe, and there's nobody left in those communities anymore in Europe, I believe it still exists because it is what I call pan-Ashkenazic. To my knowledge, all Ashkenazim keep it. Contrast this with another Pesach custom. Gevurot was never accepted by all Ashkenazim. Everyone knows that certain, mostly in Eastern Europe, was accepted. Parts Western Europe was not accepted. I'm not going into the exact geographical lines, you know. It seems to me that if somebody moved from Europe to America, that the custom of that place, in Galicia, for example, is no longer binding. For the very reason that you said, that's not pan-Ashkenazic. That's the distinction which I draw. I'm just giving you my opinion. I'm sure there are many other opinions in different directions. Let me go a little bit further. I would like to give two examples of changes, one of which we'll discuss at length as one of our examples. And I'm opening the floor for suggestions. This year we didn't put out the schedule in advance. We have a little bit more flexibility. This series is entitled Evolution and Change in Halacha, and we have a few topics we want to discuss that are lined up, but other topics can be submitted. Who wants to volunteer the email for submissions? Who has a... What's your email address?
Eddie Turkel.
EDDIETURKEL
@gmail.com.
Whoever sends in, we'll take it into consideration. Okay? Two examples. One, when does the day end? When does Friday end? When does Shabbos end? This will be a topic, this will be one of the topics which we are discussing, evolution and change. We all know it changed. It's clear. Now I'm not talking about 1,000 years ago. I'm talking about 100 in the last 100 years. Last 70 years. Before World War II, there were people who did not bring in Shabbos at sunset. That's a fact. That's a fact. Now, to the best of my knowledge, everywhere they bring in Shabbos at sunset. Well, what changed? How could this change? Number two, I want to talk about a little bit more in the time that we have left, which is Chodosh. I'm not going to go into it in detail. I'm not going to devote an entire shiur to it, but I want to bring you a small quotation. Chodosh means new grain. Torah prohibits new grain. There's a major dispute to this day, the precise parameters of this prohibition. The Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh, all three seem to say, Rambam for sure, the other two presumably, that it's a Torah prohibition to eat this new grain throughout the world. I quote you something called Kuntres Shem Chodosh, written by the author of Mogen Ha'elef and Uchos Pesach. On the first page, it's page 177 in this edition, he says as follows. Listen, the words are almost incredible. He says like this. The dispute in the Gemara, we follow the custom. Whatever custom is nispashet, that's what we follow. Quotes a Gemara, which says so, Nogu alma kahani plus esabe. The custom is to follow three particular chachamim, even though they're minority opinions. And I read you his words. Yesh Shlomo, what's pshat? That Chodesh only applies in Eretz Yisrael and those who are in the Shia this afternoon, the Medinos HaKrovos. But the Medinos are Rechokos, there's no Truma, there's no Meiser, there's no Chodesh. The Magen Avraham quotes this, a very eminent authority. Look what he writes now. Im ken yesh lomar, shegem elu amudei ha-hora, rif ramam and rosh, ilu hoya mispashet ha-minig bi-yameyam lehokal b'chodesh b'chutzlarts. If the custom would be to be lenient in their day, gam ha-shlosh amudei ha-hora, lo hoyu ma-midim divreyam levat la-minig. They would say, the minig wins. Kol shkem imatnas matonas reshes agez, shedava kalu, certainly it's here so difficult, etc., etc. Ain potz per metzafse for yisur vaday godol koach haminig shiyesh lo amalisma. Wow! Power to the people. That's what he's saying. If you look in the Orach HaShulchan, he doesn't quite formulate it so radically, but almost. In Simon Reish Tzadi Gimel in Yoredeya. Ata shezachinu la'or zaruah la'tzadik, ata li'yishreh leiv simcha. The Rif, the Rabbam, and the Rosh prohibited it, but the Zaruah and others, some of them quoted there, Rabbeinu Baruch and the Rivar, Rabbeinu Avigdor HaKohen, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Bar Zaruah, Rabbeinu Menachem Mil Tzedek, Mordechai Godel, Ma'aril, all these Chachmei Ashkenaz say, no, there's no Yisr Chodesh, the Chutzarts. That's it, doesn't exist. And we follow them. That's what he says. We call Beis Yisrael Nekiyim, v'lo nichshlu b'Yisr Chas v'Shalom, Heter Gomer. That's what he says. He doesn't go as far as say that the Rif, Rav Rosh, would have changed their mind. They didn't say that if they came back today. But he says, on a practical basis, that we have every right to rely on the linear views, which go back, because we are Bali, we are Ashkenazim, who follow the Bali Atosis. This goes back to the original idea of Rav Yosef Karo. Where did he get these three from? Why only these three? He gave me the answer. Three Amudei Ahara Shekol Abayis Beis Yisrael Nishinu Aleha Bahoroseim. Who in effect empowered Rif, Rambam, and Rosh long after their respective demises to be the three giants in Rav Yosef Karo's calculus upon whom we can rely and follow the majority thereof? Who? Beis Yisrael. The people. Once again, the people. Of course, as Rav Yosef Karo himself said, there were often majorities outside these three, and the people followed them. Pashat Aminig. So the Beis Yisrael is relying on Rif, Rambam, and Rosh usually, but there's a proven exception where they, it's not clear again in his formulation. What came first? The Pashat Aminig like others? Or the fact that others are a majority. Not exactly clear. I read it before. It's a little bit ambiguous. The people. But I'll end with this. The people are the people who are searching for the truth and are searching to rely upon great Talmidei Chachamim who are credentialed, means they're experts in Torah law, and here I refer to one final source, the opening page of the Igros Moshe, of Moshe Feinstein's Shuvas, page 1, volume 1, we explain that every Talmud Chacham in his time is required to analyze issues and required to arrive at independent decisions and to rule in accordance with those decisions, but he He must have Yerei Shammai. Must be Yerei, has to be very clearly fear of heaven. Kovod Rosh has to be serious and to know the corpus of the halachic literature. And within that group, the people choose. What Rei Rav Moshe, the posting for America for all those years? Did he have a degree? No.
People follow.
Exactly. The people realized that he was a great Talmud Chacham, a Yerei Shamayim, who knew and who understood, and he related, and he figured. So the people. But, Rav Moshe writes, explicitly, some places here implicitly, if individuals are interested in forum shopping, they'll choose a rabbinical authority because it's comfortable for them, because they like what they're hearing, and they're not convinced that this Rav that they're following is the greatest Chacham, or the greatest Yerei Shamayim, or is the greatest Kovod Rosh, but simply says things which they like to hear. It's a whole different story. That's not a situation where the people are of Beis Yisrael are relying upon. You know, we talk about Beis Yisrael, we have to be careful. We're not going to say, unfortunately, the sad fact is that most of Beis Yisrael today doesn't even follow halacha at all. That's a sad fact. Obviously, that doesn't count. So we're only referring to individuals who are interested in following the successors of all those great rabbonim. Yes, yes, back to Moshe Rabbeinu, as we read, and then back to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and we read about Ravina Ravashi, we read about the Rambam, and Rabbi Yosef Karo, and about the Ramon, and about the Chazon Ish, and Rabbi Moshe. These are the names I threw out into the middle of today's Shia. Yeah, we don't have those people in today's generation, but something along those lines, even in miniature, in today's world, Yiftach B'dor, Kishmul B'dor, but it has to be people who have that orientation. My time is up. I'll take questions afterwards. I'd like to thank everybody for coming and coming on time. I'll try to come to start as close to 7 and end as close to 8 as we can. Next week, if there's no other title which will take precedence on the email, I was asked to talk about something called the evolution of the Aleph, which is a very important question. It's at the topic of a particular typescript that was given to me about how large the shear for everything is. How much grape juice did you have to drink for Abdullah tonight? I confess, the amount that I drank tonight was less than certain of the greatest rabbis would have wanted me to drink, for a particular technical reason. Why? How? What's it all about? How big is an olive anyway? So next week we'll talk about that. Shavua Tov. Olive. 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 Olive.